Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good evening, Europe, and welcome along to the day trippers of the forums of a Monday night. We have a big show lined up tonight. Pete is due to join us at some stage. He's just gone out, and not unlike FSG, Pete's out. And then we've got four topics. You can see them on screen over this way, over there. Michael Edwards, he's out. The human element of football, that's out. Harvey Elliott, he's out. And LFC pundits, they're all out. So everyone is out tonight, and that's the most important thing. This, is, of course, is I'm your host. I'm not out. I'm in, as you can see, in my house. And joining me on the show tonight, of course, is Frank Stapleton and Johnny Giles and Ragnar Klavan. And that's the crack. I want to welcome everyone along to the chat. I can see you're all lively tonight, caring about transfers and everything. Let me let you all know, we're going to sign no one. So you can all need to relax there. Mbappe is not being signed, as I said, on the Canada show at the start of the transfer window. So deal with that. Gavin, if you could bring up the guests there that want to introduce Frank Stapleton, Brian Main, and Ragnar Klavan. That would be great.
Brian Main.
That would be great. That's a show for any Irish person. They'll know what that means. Good evening, all. As you can see tonight, I've got Andy, I've got Shane, I've got myself, and Pete will be joining us along soon. That's why there's a blank screen there at this moment in time. Right, lads, Michael Edwards, it's been the topic of the day. Be the man, the myth, the legend, the man that they're having a statue built for outside the Manchester City Stadium, where they had that statue built that doesn't look like anything. But Michael Edwards, supposedly leaving the club at some stage in 2021. He is a legend in my eyes at this point in time. He's the man who single-handedly built this Liverpool squad, this Liverpool team. Instrumental in bringing in Jurgen Klopp. Instrumental in changing the foundations and the structure of this club. But his style, his methodology is designed to ensure that there's continued success even after his exit. Andy, before I go on a rant in a little bit, Michael, the announcing the Michael Edwards exit via David Ornstein, who appears to be tied to somebody in the club because it was him who had all the agent talk from Henderson. How's your feelings on the idea of Michael Edwards, the transfer genius, the man who put Munchie out to the Monster Munch in his box? What do you think?
Yeah, I've no real feelings on the field. Sure, he does nothing anyway. We're not signing anyone. So he doesn't have any job to do. So that's where they're getting rid of him. And they're not even replacing him because we don't sign anyone. So they're just letting him go and then there'll be no one else there. And then all the FSG out heads are going to fall off a cliff and everyone's going to go even madder. And oh, seriously, it's just, I seen it today, and it's like fans are just constantly looking for something to complain about or something to feel sad about. Liverpool are playing good football. It looks like they're a lot better than they were last season. And we draw against Chelsea, and they announce that a director of football or whatever he is leaving, and everyone's gone absolutely rasher. Seriously, people leave football clubs. When Bilvac left, people's heads were falling off because they thought we couldn't play attacking football anymore. When Gini Wijnaldum announced that he was going to be leaving, people's heads were falling off because everyone thought there was mad rumblings going on at the club. Every time someone leaves, people just go rasher, and it's all based on assumptions. Seriously, I don't know. Like, if you can't enjoy this football team and you're worrying about Michael Edwards leaving, seriously, forget about it. When he was recruited or when he was given that promotion, people went mad over that too because they didn't feel he was fit for purpose. Then he became one of the best at his jobs in the business. And now he's leaving. And now he's just going to be replaced by someone that we're all going to be praising in a couple of years, and then maybe we won't, and then they'll leave and they'll be going mad again. Seriously, get over it. Liverpool are deadly. Don't be worrying about fellas leaving.
Shane, you said to me before we started this, who's Michael Edwards? So what's your take on the whole system? Do you know who these people are?
Listen, I'm looking forward to you educating me now when you go off on your rant. But no, in all seriousness, look, like Andy said, like, he's going to be replaced. I think you're right. I think all the things that being written about the situation is kind of down to like what you said, that it's a system. And the system doesn't rely on one man. It's designed to keep running if one particular man leaves. So I would be confident. I don't know too much about Edwards. I think he gets a lot of credit at times. He got a lot of credit at times for selling players on and getting over the odds, would seem, for money, over the odds money for squad players. That seemed to have slowed down the last couple of seasons. But by all accounts, this fella is highly rated. This fella, Julian Ward, or whatever his name is. So, I mean, listen, there's no point in fucking shooting this fella before he's in the job. Just have to wait and see. It's basically
it. I think it's a sign of the times as to what's going on out there at this moment in time. Andy's touching it. The people have spent everything they're doing moaning, blittering on like a bunch of shite horses that fucking have nothing to do but wander around in the field, chewing on the grass of transfer bollocks.
Bilge, as
they rant onwards. A couple of weeks ago, Jurgen Klopp was the genius behind everything, and we needed Klopp to have a new contract, and we needed all the players to have a new contract. Now, Edwards is the genius, but Edwards wasn't the genius because Edwards didn't want to sign anyone only 2 weeks ago. The fact is, there is no one person that's better than the other. The fact is that the reason why this system is set up to work the way it is it's designed to work, to be better than the sum of its parts. You see this, that Klopp is the best ever, and if everything falls apart if Klopp isn't around. Klopp wouldn't have won anything with Borussia Dortmund in the last few years had he stayed there, mainly because it doesn't really matter with Sark. They had a similar setup, and if the best team in the league comes in and just buys all your best players whenever they feel like all the time, you're never going to win the league. That's just the way it is, right? What this club has been built on is the idea that we would have to outperform the sum of our parts, that we would pick up players who are not designed to be the top of the hill. They're designed to be those just about to come to the top of the hill. Since Michael Edwards has come in, we have been competent in developing a system that delivers improved and sustained improved success year on year, ultimately resulting in a position that we could attract a manager of Klopp's levels, not the Brendan Rodgers levels, not the Kenny Dalglish levels, not the Roy Hodgson levels, but we're talking about an elite coach, and we remain an incredibly attractive position to do what it is. Thankfully, the system that Michael Edwards has set up is designed to allow succession to continue on. This is designed, and I see this, Jono, filmed the system never worked before Klopp arrived. Did he not? Mid-table dross for years. Where were we, yeah? So 13-14 didn't happen. That didn't happen. That was an imagination. Right? Even when Kenny was there, had we managed to put the thing together about 60 days, or 60, the last 60 days, we could have got close to the Champions League. This is ridiculous. So Michael Edwards leaving.
You'd be told, oh, that was Suarez and Sterling and Sturridge. Like,
yeah.
What is it with our own fans that they try and make excuses for our own success? Like, that it wasn't built on anything planned. Like, they're constantly trying to discredit everything. It's actually bizarre. How is anyone even enjoying watching football? It's like the interest in the inside shows, you know, second guessing everything or pretending you know better. sit down at 3 o'clock on a Saturday or whatever, half five or whatever time the game, and just enjoy it. There's a lot of people getting paid big money to do all that worrying for you. And the product they're producing on a weekend is pretty fucking good.
It's immense. We're one of the best teams in Europe. We've been to the top. We've been to the top. I look at this and say, can people not and respect that? What somebody like Michael Edwards has done? He should have a statue up outside Anfield. Klopp should get a statue up outside Anfield. Both of them delivered a Champions League, two Champions League finals, a Champions League, and a league. Edwards has been responsible for two runners-up goals at league titles, more than anybody has done. So for me, I'm saying that this is what this system is designed for. And I just hope that the system he set up is as infallible as he has been as a sporting director. Last week, people would have been moaning that Michael Edwards wasn't outside anyone and he's been rigid and he's sticking to the FSG plan and it's all FSG, it's FSG, if it's FSG. It's not.
It's because people think there's an ulterior motive. There's something going on behind the scenes.
He's probably got a big job in the NFL.
Andy mentioned it earlier. Sometimes people leave jobs and move on. It's like, Buvac left, he moved on. Like sometimes, according to the article in The Athletic, I didn't read the article, just seen the headlines of it, everything is seemingly very amicable. Extremely amicable between, there's been no data as to when he stepped down. It doesn't say he definitely is stepping down. It's saying the article, the headline says it's believed he will step down and that this fella is in place, this fella is in place. Julian Mart is increasingly influential. So, I mean, we are where we are.
I think we should be celebrating.
Yeah, and also, just to hark back, I know people are talking about going back over the years and things haven't been good until Klopp came in and stuff like that. We got things right. We signed for, like this. Remember, I'm going to give it the name that the press gave it to Maloney all those years ago, the transfer committee. Yeah, that article was floating around today, the article that Neil Ashton wrote, basically slamming Michael Edwards for being an analyst, etc., and it's putting all scouts out of business and it won't work. And blah blah blah. And now listen, we signed Firmino, we signed Coutinho. It works. It has worked. And hopefully, hopefully it can continue to work in the future.
There's a super chat there from Billy Cometio because he hasn't got much to do at the moment. He's not getting sent out on loan because Michael Edwards is gone. He's left the building. He's found Ian Ayre's bike and he's doing wheelies around the old Melwood. Super chat one set from Billy Cometio. What's wrong with wanting to replace players sold? Nothing.
Nobody ever said there was.
Nobody just want to replace. But what's wrong with understanding that you don't necessarily have to buy every time you want to replace a player that's sold? It works both ways.
Klopp apparently, I didn't hear this quote, but Klopp apparently said about Harvey Elliott. I know we're going to speak about him later on. But if Gino Wijnaldum was still here, he wouldn't be getting minutes on the pitch. So what do we want? Do you want Gini kept? Do you want Harvey Elliott playing? You have to have a pathway for these players. So it's all a bit. Do you know what I mean? And listen, that's not me saying we'll get to it later on. I think we're short one.
And if people don't understand,
I think we're short in a Rigi upgrade. I think we should be. We should have been looking at a way to edge Rigi out. I don't see him having much of a future, but look, you never know.
The biggest thing for me, Andy, is that if Edwards decides to leave, I don't want to see him going to a club in England. If he goes to Real Madrid or he goes to a Barcelona or goes to a somewhere like that, he's going to set up the system somewhere else. You just wouldn't want to see him going to an Arsenal or a Manchester United. Hey, Pete.
All right.
A Manchester United.
Happy.
You must. Jesus, you must. You're not looking great after.
I was out of sun for 2 weeks.
I just don't understand. So for me, it's an orderly exit. If it is what it says. But the one thing I will say is that so far, David Ornstein, despite getting information from agents, he's been 100% wrong Henderson's about to sign his new contract instead of going to Atletico Madrid. And if that's anything to go by, there's probably a good chance that Edwards is going to be made president of FSG and run the Red Sox.
Is David Ornstein in the Athletic?
Yeah.
Oh, forget it. Can I ask a question? Every time I see something like that, it's clickbait.
But can I ask you a question? And I'm only jumping in here until Pete arrives, and then I'll go away. But the stuff on this Michael Edwards stuff, the timing of it from Ornstein is very interesting, right? And, you know, like you said there, it could be a fella that, I don't know how many years he's at Liverpool. I think someone said 10. And he's not only being...
Eight,
somewhere around there. But like, if you look at the development of the main stand, if you look at the development of, in particular, Kirby, he had a massive role in it, with the optics of it and how it would set up and stuff like that. He had a huge role. There's actually a program on LFC TV about it. So there's much, much more to his job than just signing players and selling players. But when you look at it and you see what's going on, Do you think there might be something in this? Like, people are saying there has to be something in this. And look, they could be completely right or they could be completely wrong because no one really knows, right? But could there be something in it? Because, and I tried to make this point last night on the Fat Back Four. We keep being told next summer, right? And I think we're going to run into a roadblock with this squad. And I think next summer will be it. Because
who keeps saying next summer though, Gav?
No, well, like I've seen reports. I've seen reports. Liverpool are looking at
Chris said this summer.
Maybe this summer, maybe next summer, and stuff. What I'm saying is, if it doesn't happen this summer, right, which is literally in the next 24 hours, it very rarely happens in January, and then you go on, and it's next summer when you're going to look to do things with this squad. Do any of you feel that we, like, without sounding like you're just absolutely going fucking mental because we haven't signed anyone, and I think we're all in agreement we probably need one, if not two. Do you not feel that next summer you could be looking going, there's probably too much to do here to make, you know, my feeling on it was two or three in this summer and your forward plan, and when you get to next summer, you probably add two, three, and over that year's time, you've reshaped and you've remoulded the squad, because I think next summer looks a very difficult proposition with what we've done this summer. I just wanted to see.
Okay, Gav, and if that's the case, and Edwards has decided himself that he wanted a new challenge, right? Say there's a lot of talk about him going to America. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to a football team. He could be going to a top role in the MSL or something like that to make it a bigger project or a bigger prospect. His whole thing is about data and identifying places in data, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be stuck in football. But I look at it, when you say that, I'm going to be disappointed if we've only signed Kanase this summer, right? I said it, I was on the Fat Back Four, I've been on, I can't remember whatever other shows we've done as well, and I said, I truly believe we need to get at least one centre mid, if not two centre mids in this summer. However, and it's going to be probably a topic for next week, I think we're going to post a loss of somewhere around £130 million sterling for the last year. And the focus on contracts, and fans don't like this stuff, but the focus on contracts means that they can spread the cost across a longer term. It means that you can still afford to do that when you're trying to offset losses in your football club, okay? Because you have less of an impact on your bottom line. It doesn't mean you haven't got the free cash or anything like that, but you just have this, right? And I think when you put a whole team together, I think Edwards has probably thought, right, I've done everything, taken them to the top, got them to the Champions League, done all this. What do I do? What's from here? The next is another rebuild. It's what happens after Klopp. It's what happens when this whole team comes in and everything. I think it's perfectly normal to see refreshing up. But for me, I think he should be seen as the influence and how important he was to where we got, right? And hopefully his system and his methods and his structure puts us in good stead for the next rebuild and the next evolution of this team. Because I truly believe we're looking at, Klopp has only got two seasons after this. I don't think he'll sign an extension. I don't think he wants to sign an extension. And then from that point on, it's what happens, because you want to have your next sporting director in place to make the choice of who's going to replace Klopp after him. Right? And if the sporting director is not in it for the long term, you're better off having the guy who's going to be in it for the long term. It's the American model. And again, I'll go back to it. You've got to educate yourself. If you're a fan out there, you've got to educate yourself on American sporting models to understand how FSG will think and what FSG will back out there. And the sporting director is the one that's there for the long term. The coach is seen to be the one that's there for a relatively short term and a period of success. They move on and the sporting director continues to build and rebuild the evolutions of each team. And that's just the simple fact it is.
Yeah, I know that's a simple fact. And I know that that's, you know, like you say, it's very straightforward what you've said there. All I'm saying is, in a footballing sense, when you look at the squad we have now and we feel like we're too short, right? And we don't do anything, we go to next summer. We're going into next summer too short, at least, right? Can you, I don't know if I can see us going and signing 4 or 5 for the money that we would expect to sign them for. Now, I know people would say, you know, oh, well, we bring in players at 30 million and we make them stars. And we do. We absolutely do. Salah being case in point, 34 million, and he's probably worth, he's worth north of 150, I'd say. But what I'm saying is, like, can you actually see that happening next summer, where Liverpool turn around and go, we have this squad, we're going to lose A, B and C, and we feel we need 2 more. And A, B and C are probably Minamino, Origi and Milner, which will probably bring you in around 20 million quid. So if you want to sign 5, you're going to probably have to put 130 to 150 million down on the table. Can you see that happening? Because I don't know if I can.
Will you need 5 though?
But, well, you need 2 now. You need 2 now, right? And
yeah, so two squad players.
I don't like the term squad players. I like to fill in and be players. You know, so, but
who will drop out of the first 11 next year?
I'm not here to say people that are going absolutely mental are 100% correct. All I'm trying to say is, if you look at it from both sides, right, you want something now, you probably do. And I think the vast majority of people think a midfielder and a forward. What I'm saying is, if you leave that another year, which you probably will, January doesn't work majority of the time, when you come to next year, you're going to say, well, we probably needed 2 last summer. And Milner's another year older. He'd be approaching 37, I think. Origi's definitely not going to be playing, because I don't think he's getting a look in unless they get rid of him in the next 24 hours. And Minamino isn't trusted. So you're probably looking at 20 million max to get them out, right? And then you're saying, now I need 4 or 5. So now we're talking 150, 160 million. Can you see the club doing that?
How do you mean Minamino isn't trusted?
I don't think he's trusted, Andy. I think I have a feeling if he was trusted.
How many times, though?
If he was trusted, he would have gone on that pitch on Sunday.
I know, but we've seen it so many times where players have taken a long time to be in Klopp's plans. You know, we spent big money on Fabinho and it took him a few months to get into the team. The same with Robertson. Like, there's nothing to say. Like, look, Minamino went off to Southampton, had a half-decent loan spell. He was good in pre-season. There's absolutely no reason. Just because he didn't come on at the weekend doesn't mean that he's not going to start featuring a little bit. Rumour has it that Bobby's going to be out for a couple of months now. We'll probably start seeing Minamino playing a bit of football, and then you'd be saying to yourself, oh, maybe he does trust him. I think Klopp trusts everyone that's there. I think you make very valid points about this sort of succession planning. The club are probably a year behind in what they were trying to do in terms of shifting players. A lot of what's happening this summer should have happened last year, but didn't because of a pandemic. And Phil makes a very valid point, and people don't like hearing logical explanations for things. But the club did report a loss this year, and they're going to report another one probably 3 times the size of that. And that's the reality. And that makes it difficult to spend money. But you know, they say we're not investing in the club. Well, player wages cost money. And it's all well and good when you're winning European Cups and winning the league and there's all these incentivized contracts. But I can guarantee you those renewals are all going to be guaranteed wages to keep the players happy at the club. And you have to just trust the process. It's worked so far. And we've been hit by the pandemic, which is going to affect finances. Look, and we're probably bored of tits off people listening now, but that is the reality. We do probably need a backup forward, like as in get rid of Origi and bring in someone that's going to challenge midfield. There's loads and loads of options, but unfortunately, there's a lot of players who are injury prone, but some of that falls on Klopp as well. Like, why wasn't some of these players who you can't rely upon shifted out the door? It took them a very long time to get rid of Lallana. And we kind of see the same problems at the back, which causes. So we're relying on, there's probably whatever 4 or 5 players who can play centre back this year, but it's a good chance you might lose 2 or 3 of them for long spells. So it's not all straightforward. It's not, you bring in a player and then they get injured themselves. Like, you know.
Well, can I just go back? This is the process, right? It seems to me that Klopp has bought into the idea that they'll only go out now and sign players they feel will improve what's there. Right? We've seen this with the Van Dijk position when we were waiting around to sign Van Dijk and everyone was screaming that we should be signing this fella and that fella and the whole lot, and we held on and we got Van Dijk. And they've spent money. The other bit is that they've spent money in that period to get us over the line for the Premier League and the Champions League. Like, we signed, we had the most expensive goalkeeper in the world, the most expensive centre-back. We spent 53 million on Keita. We spent another 50 million on Fabinho. We spent all this money, right, when they went to do it. But I agree with Gav's point. My point is the exact same. It's not that I don't believe they won't spend the money. I truly believe that the change has to be too big. And that goes, I'll go back to it again, that goes back to the American ideology that they go in and rip apart the squad and build it all back up again. If you look at what happens in baseball, which is the sport that they're most familiar with, right, and the most familiar in terms of the way it happens, is that when your system when your season falls apart, instead of waiting around, they'll sign the general manager, which is essentially the sporting director, and they'll get rid of all the players. They'll trade all the players away so they have the most amount of money to spend on new players for the new season to build a new championship level side, right? And if you look at, that's what the Red Sox did 2 years ago, and they're now back in the running for winning the World Championship or the World Series, whatever the hell it's called this year, right? That's their mindset. So when if the sporting director goes to them and says, we're going to refresh the squad, and they say, well, we've had a 200 million loss, we're going to have to hang on 12 months, right? Potentially, that's the point where they're saying, well, it's going to be tougher, because if you look at who are spending this summer? Who are spending this summer, and what are they buying? We've seen a 36-year-old move to PSG for 100 billion euros in terms of what his wages are going to cost. We've a 39-year-old going to United for 23 million plus 500 million a week in wages, right? They're the marquee transfers this summer. Lukaku signs back for Chelsea after leaving Chelsea 14 years ago for 140 million zillion euros as well.
Yeah, but I think that club...
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's their only signing, isn't it? That's their only significant signing. And he's,
but the clubs you've brought up there aren't playing the same game that most of us are playing. Like PSG, Chelsea, United even, and City don't play the same game as everybody else. I think it's a poor... Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a good comparison. You know, I look at Arsenal, right, and they've spent 150 odd million. I don't know what they've done with it, but what I'm saying is this, for me, like, I think it just comes down to a policy thing. It genuinely does. It comes down to a policy thing, because you have people in the chat there saying, oh, you know, are we the only club affected by COVID? Absolutely not. You know, I think Liverpool have lost somewhere around 130 million. I think they might be the second most affected. I know Spurs got hit badly because they haven't been able to push revenue through that new stadium. It's all being linked to Man City, 104 million, blah, blah, blah. But Man City can recuperate that in whatever way they need to do, right? But it's simply a policy thing, because, like, Wolves linked for 40 million for Renato Sanchez, and Botman at probably 25. There's 65 million. You're going, what's going on? This team signing that. It's obviously a policy thing. It has to be a policy thing, because there's no way on this earth, right, that teams can go out and spend 70, 80, 90, 100 million during this time, and Liverpool can't. There's not in my mind, they can't. So
Liverpool are paying their players a lot of money, Gav.
But they're earning a lot more money than these clubs as well, Andy. When you offset it, like Liverpool earn a lot more than a Wolves or a Aston Villa.
Our wages to revenue ratio is quite high.
Yeah,
you know, compared to those clubs, where, you know, you look at everything, seems to be a very unsustainable model. Their wage to revenue is massive. But look, like, you're bringing up other clubs. We don't know the ins and outs. We don't even know the ins and outs of our own club.
No,
it's policy and funding. You can't deny when you see the club reporting them losses. You know, they're not lawyers. This is the reality. Like, that's, you have to factor that into your thought process. And Klopp probably has limited resources. I think he's kind of alluded to it quite a few times. And that's just the name of the game for him. You know, and that's just the way it is. I don't know, Gav.
I'm just asking the question because you will get people asking. I'm asking why aren't they signing too? From a purely footballing reason, like, you know, where do you get the money and what do you do with it? You know, what's it? I hate to say what's it, it's not my money, but you know what I'm saying? I'm looking at it purely of football and going, in that squad, for me, a midfielder and an attacker allows us to compete on two levels as opposed to
be honest, Gav, I just find it hard to believe, you know, you have to, you know, the whole one player in, one player out, like the squad was full, you know, and then Shaqiri left and no one really came in. You want to see, I find it hard to believe that you can't shift Origi and bring in another player. I find it hard to believe that you can't say shift one of the more, one of the midfielders who is more likely to pick up an injury across the season or a defender. Like, I'm quite surprised that neither Gomez or Matip were moved on. Look, I really do think they're both excellent players, but between the two of them, they can't make up the minutes of one player. You know, so like, these are the kind of questions I ask myself is the reason our squad looks so light is because 2 or 3 months into the season, you're looking at the bench and you've 2 goalkeepers there and you've, you know, you've all sorts going on because of the fact that so many players are injured. You know, and that's, I think, that's one of the biggest.
Bench was very strong on Saturday night, though.
Everyone's fit.
It's the strongest bench I've seen in a long time, right? Mm. And the bigger questions that you're coming off the back of that is like if Henderson, or midfield's Henderson, Elliot, and Fabinho for such a big game, and it's great to see Elliot get game time. And he's playing really, really well. I just keep coming back to it and saying, well, there you've got Thiago and you've got all the other fellas that could be playing in centre midfield. And I still look at it and say, Henderson is one of the first names that's on the team sheet. He's the fella, his replacement, and I gave it out in the last one, it's the one that I would have liked to see is Graven Birch at Ajax. That's the fella I thought we should go. That's the heir apparent to Henderson. And I think grooming an heir for Henderson now should be top priority, because that's where you start refreshing your engine room. And we still don't have cover, in my opinion, for Fabinho, because if you lose Fabinho, you don't have, like, we were playing Milner there in the first game against Norwich. Now, it's grand, it's Norwich, you get away with it, it's fine. But if you get into the bigger games, that's where the worry I have, because, you know, normally it'd be Henderson or Wijnaldum, and you're going to have a question over Henderson's longevity across the course of the season, and you don't have a Wijnaldum to step in and cover that position. But, like, this, I'm just reading some of the chats, and it's just, like, the amount of shit that's being spoken in there. FSGO. What's the alternative? We've gone through this loads of times, like, because it doesn't make any sense. It's just putting words in a hashtag together. It means nothing. FSGO. Grant,
I like a shiny new sign as much as anybody, but Gav alluded to it earlier. I think what they've done off the pitch, like, is just, it's just like new stand, new training ground. Second Anfield Road is going to get done. Like, it's, and the price of the club has gone fucking through the roof for when they do eventually sell. We've won the league, we've won a Champions League, we got to another final. Europa League final. It's absolutely unbelievable. And look at, who knows what way it's going to pan out. I think we need one, at least, but one, right? We mightn't get it. But we got fucking won the Champions League and signed Sepp Vandenberg. Do you know what I mean? And then we've kicked on.
Won the league.
You know what I mean? We kicked on, exactly. Yeah. So
it's the same shite going on for years. Like, before we won the league, before we won the Champions League, it was the same shite. And every season, look, I'm not saying I was right or anything like that, but every season I felt that we were improving. You know, the squad is improving, the football is improving, and slowly but surely we're getting closer to win the league, and we did. And all along, people were saying FSG out and barking mad. I don't understand. It's just a weird phenomenon. I don't know whether it's like just spoiled brats on Twitter that have got this thing going and convinced people that, like, FSG out, and then they go, and then somebody comes in that's magic. That's not how the world works. Matt, you know.
But here's a better one. Instead of FSG out.
Is that Wayne Stewart point spot on? And what I mean by policy on the screen, he says most of the clubs are leveraging more debt to their clubs to go out and buy players, and Liverpool aren't. Is that
not most of them, because most of them,
I would
understand,
say a lot of them are leveraging debt.
FFP is fucking dead, right? They aren't leveraging debt because they can get equity pushed into the owners, and there's no caps on what they're doing at this stage, because they have to come up with a new system to FFP. Ours are still, we've built a model that's designed, forget FFP, it's designed to be self-sustaining within the club's own commercial revenue streams, right? PSG, owners pushed in as much money as they want to sign whoever they want. Man City, it's the exact same thing this time, right? United, the owners have pushed in whatever amount of money they put in, but they probably put them in as a debt note on top of the club in terms of United's piece, because that's what they do, and they'll pay themselves an interest coupon off the back of the commercial revenues and take more money out of United. But the United fans won't care about it until they have to go on a march because they're not winning matches. Like, it's just a bunch of I come back to it and say, our model is our model. We said here, most people, if you go back 6 months, would have been saying the FSG model is right. We just want them to spend a bit more. So instead of writing FSG out in your hashtags, put FSG spend. Change it to that, because that's exactly what you want. FSG spend. FSG yeah. transfer.
And I think...
Do you know what I mean?
I kind of look at it and, like, there is loads of people in the chat and they're, like, livid with FSG, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, when I genuinely look at it, and I'm playing devil's advocate a bit here, I'm going to be honest with you, because I'm quite open in the fact that when you do something good, great. When you do something bad, have a go at them. And in between, what do you get? I'm very open on that. You know, me and Andy have had loads of fucking rails over them and stuff like that. But when I actually read through the comments and even on social media or whatever, or even talking to just general Liverpool fans, and, you know, it's actually when you break it all down, everybody wants the same thing. It's two players. Everybody wants the same thing as two players. It's just, what do you think should happen?
How is saying FSG going to achieve that though? You know,
no, just, that's what I'm saying. I think it's not the actual two players that might be the issue. It's what should happen if they don't sign the two. Like, I think they should be questioned, and I think it should be a case of, why aren't we doing this on a purely football side of things, not financial. And then there's others that'll say, you know, just get rid of them because they're just not doing it.
Yeah. I think as well, comparing us with other teams which have different objectives, who have bigger bridges to gap as well, like, you know, talking about Arsenal spending, look at the state of Arsenal. They're not spending their way out of anything. You know, they're spending, and they're probably going to finish mid-table or bottom half. Like, just as it's not as straightforward as that. We have got a very strong squad which is well capable of winning the league. You know, City went out and bought one player effectively, in Grealish, spent a lot, overpaid on him, player that doesn't really improve them, but he's just going to be another part of that system there, and he's going to be good and everything. And then Chelsea, they did need a Lukaku type of striker. They spent money on Werner, who we were all like going fucking nuts for, had a shite season, and now they've went back to kind of a bit of a you know, Lukaku probably fits what they need, but he's not a £100 million player. And when he left the Premier League, he was a laughing stock. And now all of a sudden he's come back and people are behaving like he's the answer to everything. You know, we have a squad there and a forced 11, which is probably better than most teams. You know, I don't think when you're comparing us with teams that are spending money on, they probably really, really do desperately need to. And when Liverpool did need a goalkeeper, they went out and broke the world record bought the best goalkeeper in the world, and we still have him for many years. And Virgil the same. You know what I mean? We needed a player like Fabinho, and they went out and did it. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to come a time when Mane or Salah or one of the more important players of Spain will need to be replaced. And they have shown, in fairness to them, they have shown that they've done it when they need to do it. But right now, yeah, I agree. Like, we probably need, I feel we need to just an upgrade in Origi and we're good to go. The rest in the midfield, I just think our weakness is the injuries. And that's probably going to mean saying goodbye to one of the midfielders.
Phil mentioned earlier, like, there's loads of stuff flowing in the chat about signing X, Y, and Z. And I get that. We all agree we need someone to come in. But it was mentioned earlier, these contract renewals, right? Now, people don't want to take them into consideration. But can you imagine leaving Trent's contract run down because you want to sign a backup for somebody, or you let another contract, you don't give them the new deal that the player is expecting? That wouldn't be prudent, I don't think. Like, it's good to tie these fellas down. Tie the main people down in your squad to the long-term deals. Get them sorted so there's no ambiguity about, he's like Genie, he's a year left. oh, well, we should have tied him down 3 years ago. Oh, well, we couldn't because we wanted to sign a backup, or we wanted to sign a backup midfielder. Now, listen, loads of people say you should be able to do both, but we're coming out of COVID. I don't fucking know the ins and outs of it, the financial of the club. I'm not an accountant. But I'm just saying, there is something very, very forward thinking in signing all your main fucking players down to new contracts. That's all.
I just think, I know we started off with Michael Edwards, and I'm going to skip Pete's topic because he's not here to talk about it tonight, right?
Deadly, but because I was going to take it.
I'm going to skip it because I want this to lead into
45 minutes talking about this. Show.
I know, yeah. But to be fair, it's more from Michael Edwards into a conversation around the structure in general, which it's always going to lead to, because without Edwards, the question is, does the structure work? And even with Edwards there, the questions have been: do we need more players? Are we leaving it too big a job to do next season or whatever season is to decide to rebuild? And I'm with Gav in that I think it is too big of a rebuild to be taken on. I think it's a foolish way to go about it because you'll actually end up further behind than where you need to be.
Does that fall on Klopp though?
It does a bit, Andy, and people won't say this, but he's incredibly over loyal in some instances to players, right? And that comes down to, like, he even said it, that he wanted to keep Wijnaldum. Now, I was in favour of Wijnaldum going, but I was in favour of Wijnaldum going because I believed it was going to lead to a refresh in the midfield. I've no issue with them re-signing Salah. I've no issue with them re-signing. Who's re-signed for us? Alisson, Van Dijk.
Trent. Rabo.
So, and if we get Salah, I'd like, Fabinho. I think the big thing for them is that they were thought there would have been a market available for Mane either this summer or last summer. And because of COVID, there hasn't been the 100 million market they were probably expecting. And I hate saying this, but it is part of the model. They were probably expecting to get 100 million in for one of them and would have used that to accelerate the rebuild in terms of what it is. And that's how they've operated. And I've no issue with that because that's how they've operated. And if I can get 150 million in and spend 150 million, I'm fucking brand new. I'm brand new.
I think if it does go to next summer, I would be of the opinion that Mane should be the Origi upgrade and someone should be brought into the starting 11.
Yeah.
And that's the pitch. Mm. That's if it does go to next summer. Because yeah, that would be my thinking of it. I'd like someone now, but if it does go out the next summer, that's the way I would be thinking of it.
The thing for me in midfield, we've got Thiago who's over 30, we've Henderson now who's over 30 who we're going to rely on. We've got Milner who's over 30 who we've relied on up until now. And as myself and Gav have agreed on this a number of times, this was the year to get your two in so that you had them embedded in the style and you have your long-term replacements already sitting in there learning how to play the game the way we want them to play.
You take it over 2 a year. That's the way I thought of it. 2 a year because if you tell me that Konate comes in and on top of Konate, you're going to reshape this squad with 4 new players over the next 12 months, I think most people would be absolutely delighted with that. I just worry on the money lost is no argument. There's no money argument. It's policy for me. And I think clubs are out there. I think they are leveraging debt. I think they are just taking loans and going, listen, we'll fuck it all at it because we'll make it back when things get back to normal because there's so much money in the game. But I just look at us going, there's no way. I find that very hard to believe that we didn't look at that squad and go, lads, we need 2 or 3. And then next season, if that goes to 4 or 5, which it will because of an aging squad, players that we don't want running down contracts and will probably sit happily for another year unless we get rid of them for pittance, i.e. Origi. I just think it's a very hard job to do next summer, unless they're willing to put a serious amount of money up. And I don't, I'm not too sure if they are.
But the other bit is that they've obviously, with this structure that Edwards, and I'll just finish off because it brings it back to Edwards, the structure that Edwards put in place puts a value on every player they'd look at as a target. If it goes above a certain value, they're not interested in signing them, right? That's what happened. That's how we ended up with Salah instead of Julian Brandt. The story's in it today, okay? The thing is, though, that model is being used by a number of other clubs. If we look at West Ham's recruitment, they've employed the exact same statistical model Liverpool have over the last 4 years in a shorter time frame. And you can see that they've been picking up the players that we had been picking up before we got to the position where we were winning things again. Okay. So you got a question now. What's the next evolution of that transfer methodology and data-driven transfer methodology? And maybe that's why the club are happy to let Edwards go, because they want to bring in the next brain, the next one with the intelligence who brings a little change or a new level of data sophistication in there that gives them the edge in the transfer market again. And there's a genuine question that if that's how we're being, if that's how the system works, which we know it is, then maybe it's time for the next revolution of the system, or the next evolution of the system, and not just the players as well, because the system has to be right to continue to maintain success with the way we do. There was some super chat there. I don't know what it was. Something about FSG.
It's gone off the screen there, but
I don't understand what the point there was. Sort of contradicting itself.
Yep.
On one hand, he was saying they bought.
Thanks for the super chat.
On one hand, he was saying they bought Jota, Thiago, and Konate in the last 12 months. And then he was saying that he's emotionally drained because you don't spend the same amount as Arsenal.
Yeah.
Like that's three starters you're talking mm-hmm. about there in 12 months. You know, so maybe.
Can I just say that Real Madrid have pulled out of the Mbappe signing. They're not interested in signing him, which means that Klopp has now lodged the bid for Mbappe, and Mbappe will be signed tomorrow. So everyone just needs to remember that. So when we're all losing the plot. Right, moving along, and I think it's a valid way of moving this on. On which way am I going to go with this? To Shane on the impact of personal circumstances on players' form, right? I think this is led by what happened with Alisson in the middle of last season, and it's the human element of football, especially when we're talking about Roberto Firmino, and we're talking about now in terms of 3 months, we were talking about Fabinho in terms of his performance since when he was back in, and also it's the non-data side to the game. It's the emotional part which you can't replicate on any statistical model because you don't know what's going to happen in a person's life. So where do you want to go with this in terms of
listen, this isn't going to be a 45-minute like what the other one does, and you can see in the chat he's gone for a run with Pete. It's all flowing down in the FSG out, and it's all transfer. It's all transfers as usual. But listen, this just came off the back of kind of. I obviously watched the game Saturday. Fabinho was a bit off it, which is fine. It happens in games. You don't play well. But then it just kind of dawned on me, well, listen, the fella's father passed away like a week ago. And do we expect too much from these lads? Do we never, ever, ever think that what's going on in their personal lives? Everybody is different. What way will a player respond? Like, we had the instance of Klopp last year and his mother, he wasn't able, obviously, to get back for a funeral or anything like that. He was obviously visibly shaken. A lot of people put it down to the lack of fans. I'm sure that was a reason of it as well. But also, the man lost his mother and he wasn't able to grieve. He wasn't able to go home. Henderson played a big chunk of his career at Liverpool with his father suffering from cancer. So the topic just kind of dawned on me today. I'm thinking about Fabinho's performance being a bit off, which is fine. Some players come at a different angle. I read an article today from Bellamy's book when he spoke about Gary Speed committing suicide. He was very close to him. And his first game back was Chelsea in the League Cup, the year that we won the League Cup. And he went out and he said he was unplayable. He said the Liverpool fans sang Speed's name before the game. He got upset and he just went out and was like a man possessed and he was unplayable. 2 assists, we won the game 2-0. So listen, I don't know what you lads think. Do you think, that, like I said, everything now particularly is all about transfers and who can we get in, and this fella is shy, that fella is shy, should be Michael Edwards is gone, FSG out, FSG spent. Just sometimes the human, we just don't know what's going on. Players' personal lives that can lead to them maybe with a bad run of form or anything like that. And I just thought, just dawned on me really with Fabinho. He's absolutely an unbelievable, I love him. He's absolutely an unbelievable player, one of the first names in the team sheet, a class act. And didn't have a great game, but it's to be expected. His father passed away. So I don't know what you lads think.
100%. Davo, I think we get caught up a lot in the whole materialistic side of football, talking about shiny new signings and making demands. And I find it far more interesting to look at the players that are there and what's making them tick and what's, you know, the psychology behind it and how tight the group were. And if you look at last season, you don't just have no fans there to drag the players on. You know, you don't just have the whole thing with the injuries and no pre-season and Klopp not getting to do what he needs to do. But so much tragedy came to the players you know, Alisson's father passing away, Klopp's mother passing away, you know, all of that sort of stuff. It doesn't just disrupt the players. I mean, the players are coming in and it must be a really poor atmosphere when these guys, who are only human at the end of the day, it's very, very difficult for them to pick themselves up, and they're miles and miles away from their family and their loved ones. Everything that could have went wrong, you know, and all of that stuff was real life stuff there last year. And we're talking about dips in form, you know, Mane, you know, God knows what was going on in Mane's mind when his form fell off a cliff, and he's come out and he's being honest about it. Look, God forbid, like, you know, hopefully nothing like that happens this season and the players can get back into where they were. But if you're talking about all these things like signings, it kind of puts a bit of perspective on it there, what you're saying.
I found it very hard to assess Fabinho after the game the other day. You know, in normal circumstances, I look at Fabinho because I thought he would have been key. In normal circumstances, he would have been key, particularly the way Chelsea played through Arsenal the weekend before, where Arsenal didn't do anything to protect their back two. And I'm not saying Van Dijk and Matip need massive protection, but simply just cutting off passing lanes and not letting the ball get into Lukaku, because what they want is Lukaku to get a touch, get out of his feet and look for Mount and Havertz and whoever else is moving. So under normal circumstances, Fabinho would be huge in that because he does it brilliantly. He spots this stuff all the time. He cuts it out. He doesn't give Lukaku a chance to get on the ball and stuff. And do you know what? I didn't think Lukaku was any good the other day. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was any good. I didn't think he had any real impact. But I kind of found it hard to assess Fabinho. And the reason being is not because I didn't pay attention to him, because when you look at a guy like that playing football a week after his father dies, who's in another country, similar to what happened with Klopp and his mother, it has to be so hard. Like, I'm trying to think, like, even for argument's sake, say if I lived in America and my mother, I'm even going to a daily job, you know, it's hard. And I know they have a brilliant job in what they do, but to go out and have the whole world looking at them on a Saturday evening in a huge, huge Premier League game and being away from the majority of his family, can't go home, can't do this. I think it's so fucking hard. And I said it to you before the show, I kind of can't understand why clubs don't just turn around and go, listen, if you have a bereavement like that, you're out for 3 weeks. A bit like, you know, like if you get COVID and you're gone for 10 days, a bit like that. Mm-hmm. A bit like, literally, it's mandatory that you're gone for 2 weeks out of this club. And we don't care about results. Well, we do, but we don't care as much as your well-being. Now, you will get a lot of players come back and go, listen, the best thing I can do is play football, like take my mind off and stuff like that. But I think it's very hard to assess players when that sort of thing happens to them. And like Klopp last year, you know, you could see Klopp, you know, change significantly for me in that period last year. Like, significantly, his demeanour, the way he carried on, the way he looked when he was listening to questions. You know, it was nearly like he was away with the fairies at times, you know, the sort of way. And that's completely understandable. So I think the human element is sometimes lost, Shane. And for me, not even give them a break. I think it's just a case of that's probably best for them in their mind to come on and play against Chelsea on Saturday. But you're probably better off not assessing what they're doing on the pitch. And if they do things good, great, it builds them up. If you do things bad, you just turn around and you say to yourself, he lost his father. Like, who gives a fuck about Liverpool against Chelsea on Saturday evening? That's just the way I feel about it.
I think it's shy. They're paid hundreds of thousands of euros a week. You should just turn up and play. It's a job. Well, if you want hugs, if you want hugs and kisses, stay at home.
Right.
That 150 grand,
end the topic.
End the topic.
Right. There's no human element to football. They're robots. They're expected to turn up, perform, do their job. It's a job. It's a business. Do it. Right. There's lots of time for hugs and kisses afterwards.
I'm waiting for the punchline here. I'm genuinely.
There is none.
Okay. So.
No, just, I think if you're going to use the emotions as an excuse for why you're playing shite, then you shouldn't be out there.
No, I didn't. No, you see, I'm missing the point now because it's a human element. It's not about football. What I'm saying is, and somebody says there in the chat, are you mad? Like, people get 3 days of work. It's not enough. If you lose a family, significant family member to you, and you're given 3 days off work as standard, it's an absolute joke. It's a fucking joke, and that's the end of it. I don't care what you're in. What I'm saying to you is, in with a footballing side of things, Fabinho's probably turning around and saying to himself, I want to play, it takes me mind off it. Davo mentions there, Bellamy goes and wants to play and does and plays really well. All I'm saying is, whether he plays well or not, I wouldn't be assessing that player, and I probably wouldn't be assessing him next week either.
And well, the bigger thing for me with Fabinho is that it's always taken him two or three games to get up to speed.
Yeah.
When he's coming back after a while.
Okay, so we're now going to you're acting the bollocks now.
Yeah, edgy Irvine, edgy Guerrero. That's all he's doing now.
He completely is. It's all that bollocks.
Amongst all that nonsense he's going on with there, he did make a very valid point. And when Fabinho comes back into the team, it does tend to take him a few games. To me, it wasn't just his head not in the game. He did look physically not in the game. I thought he just wasn't himself. He wasn't as mobile. When he was on the ball, he wasn't as clinical. He, you know, his passing is normally a lot better. And then he normally does defend up a bit higher in the pitch. I think he's more comfortable defending up higher in the pitch. Playing against Chelsea, you're going to be a bit more cagey. So, look, yeah, Gav, you're dead right. It's very hard to assess that performance.
I wouldn't.
Based on the type of game it was, where he was coming from mentally, and then it is Fabinho, who's just coming back into the team as well.
I think there's more. If you're going to go down the human element of football, honestly, right? It's not just deaths, right? Births of children affect players as well, and that just gets glossed over because it impacts as soon as you go away from the football pitch. It's impacting every step of your life from that point on, because as every one of us knows that's on screen here, we've all got kids. You know what it's like trying to sleep at night. Suddenly, where these lads have sleep routines and everything like that, right? That gets impacted. If we're talking about the human,
I dread when I see a young player having their first kid.
Yeah,
I'm like fucking hell. about the performance coming.
You're spot on there. It isn't only bereavements and stuff like that. Yeah, the likes of look at Tsimikas there when he arrived last time. I don't know. His status as regards girlfriend, wife, or it like that. His Instagram stuff actually he put up. He was actually over the moon when his dog got out of quarantine and his dog was here with him. But he's over here on his own. He gets COVID. He gets injured. Obviously, COVID protocols in the club. He was probably going in his own when everyone was gone home to rehab the injury. Then he was going back to an apartment or a house or whatever and sitting there fucking twiddling his thumbs looking at the far walls. Like that. Obviously, that stuff has to take a toll at some stage for a player, and it's one of the reasons I know you were the same as me, Phil, very excited to see what he was going to bring to the table this year, and it's been very promising so far. So listen, my point is you are spot on. It isn't just only bereavements, there's a lot of other things that affect it as well.
I think it's interesting that my stance inflamed people in the chats. Yeah, it's interesting because if you go back less than 12 months, the amount of times that people use the thing, he's earning X amount a week, he should be able to do this and he should be able to do that. Yet, if you mention it against the bereavement, people go up in arms about it. This is what, human element is not just about death.
Sorry, Phil. Red Steve Gav has to be Paul Brennan's burner. About Ox.
It's affected him for 3 years. But honestly, it's not just bereavements, right? It's not just bereavements. It's not just births. There's more things as well that's going on. It's like it's the normal run today. Look at people when they talk about mental health, etc., and football and how it's impacted their games or how it impacts their ups and downs when it comes to this. Like the human element of football is probably the biggest, the last barrier to performance. And that's why they have sports psychologists. Remember we had Dr. Peters there when we had Pascoe and the nappies and everything going on when Brendan Rodgers was there, right? So they said that Peters was there for the team to get over the hump of being able to achieve what it can do, right? So there's clear, you see, there's as much money being spent on sports psychologists by those professionals and outside of their club stuff on a private basis to make sure that they're in peak condition. Most top athletes will talk that they have their own, they have a team of people around them. You know, it's not just about what the club provides them. It's how they have their own entourage to do what it's doing. So like, again, for me, the human element is the last unquantifiable barrier that no sports science department in the data-driven world can pick up on, because they don't know what's going to happen next in a person's life. They can't quantify what's gone on in the course of a week. Fuck, a marriage could break down. Look at Lovren. Fella never missed a header in his life until that went on. And everyone was on. Like, you think about the amount of abuse that he got when all that stuff was going on, right? And you realize that doesn't happen. That isn't just a bereavement. That goes on for months, because the fallout from that takes place over a year and a half. We saw with Alisson, the impact is over 2 or 3 months, and then he finds a way back to finding his form and his joy again in football, right? Whereas other stuff goes on for much longer and can impact the player's form and his mental state for a much longer time as well. So I think, Shane, when we talked about the Michael Edwards approach and the approach that FSG have, this is the one part that they can't quantify: injuries and this. And that's really the last barrier to ultimately being able to have a fully robot-style football robots. Team, which you're never going to have. You're never going to have. It's the human element. It is the human. It's the last great barrier to figure out what's going on.
I think that's a great point by Paul Scouse at Hamu, who says it's the same sort of stuff that Tacky had to go through. How it must have impacted him must be mind-blowing, because he, of course, turns up at the club and we're in a month. The whole world is in lockdown. He's on his own in England. And, like, literally, it's been well-documented that literally he turned up and was like, what? Can't see my teammates. Can't see anybody. New city on my own, like, as a young man. I think that's a thing as well. The whole bedding in thing. You know, a lot is made of it at times, but then other times you think, not just the bedding into the formation and the tactics and the things around the club, but when you see someone like Minamino turning up and literally being told you're staying in that house over there and you're not allowed out and you're not allowed to go anywhere, see anybody, and literally all he had was Zoom calls for about 4 months, that must have been hard as well.
Will you read out that guy's super chat, please, Gav?
What guy's super chat?
The one who said he was unsubscribing because...
We've had a couple. He wanted to unsubscribe because there was a problem with the super chats. They usually show up in big, colourful writing. They weren't showing up, so I was missing them. I've tried to get to them as many as I can. I'll read them all out at the end if you want. I'll get them all up, but they won't be relevant at the end. That's just something that happened on my end. That wasn't.
Shawnee Lawson is saying there, Spurs have become the first club in England to hire a mental health coach. They should hire one for the fans as well. I want to use this as a bridge to jump off, because it sort of comes around, because your topic is ex-LFC players as pundits, and it's interesting because pundits can have such a severe impact on fans, humans' approach to football and everything that they think, see and do. Because I know that with Gary Neville recently, people have suddenly realised that he's the greatest load of cockshite that the world has ever seen, and is basically just there to get as much money as he can in our pocket. So, Andy, you want to focus, though, on ex-LFC players who are now pundits. And I actually don't know where this is going, so I'm looking forward to it.
I don't know myself. I know Shawnee made two good comments there that it's quite closely related about retirement being difficult for a lot of players. So, you have a lot of ex-players involved in punditry that just aren't suitable for the job. It's crazy. And then the one about, what else did he say? Remind me.
He said there's a load of technical directors in the chat.
Sorry. It was about Spurs hiring
a mental health coach.
Well, that wouldn't impress Danny Murphy, would it? Because I was on Twitter having a little moan about Danny Murphy and his comments on TalkSport about getting rid of specialist coaches because the regular coaches should be able to do it all. And it surprised me because he's a player who was kind of there when football was evolving and changing and all these sort of things that gave football teams a competitive edge were coming in. You know, and at that level, any edge can make a big difference. Anyway, my good friend on Twitter, who's been watching the show since day one, Ray Kennedy, pulled me up and said, more or less said, don't be giving ex red stick, and as a top red, it did feel I was breaking some of sort of code of conduct, but actually, it's just more disappointing that we have to endure so many of our ex-players make tits of themselves, you know, like it kind of ruins the fairy tale that these guys are all selling. Like, we had to endure McManaman commentating against Burnley, playing down their Burnley players, dragging out the Liverpool players, like as if he was some sort of hard man himself. And then you have Carragher, who's quality on Liverpool channels, but when on Sky, he's pandering down all this shite about Liverpool won't win the league. And if you want to take an alternative escape and watch some of the American channels, you have to endure Steve Nicol going on like a complete and utter spacer. And look, I know they have to be impartial, but like, I just prefer when an ex-player is honest and, you know, expresses their proper views. Like, Souness is the best boy a country mile. Like, he supports Liverpool, but he's still impartial, you know. And I have to say, Redknapp, for all his fence-sitting and is kind of, you know, he never really commits to an opinion. I thought he was excellent when he called out Gary Neville for the hypocrisy and left it doing goldfish impressions. His game we respect for a season, because somebody needed to call Neville out on his bullshit. And it was good. It was good to see Redknapp doing that. So I'll just throw it to the floor. Like, does it ruin the fairy tale for you when you see ex-Reds going on like idiots? You know, like a couple of others that spring to mind are Lawrence and Haman, two other saps. Like,
can I just say,
Gerard? Well,
no, I was just going to say with Lawrence and. I'm going to struggle to do this because I'm completely turned off by pundits and punditry in general. It's not just Liverpool pundits. There's not one who's worth listening to. They're all sacks of shit, right? They're basically just poison.
There is, to be fair. Souness, I think, is excellent. I really think he's excellent.
Souness was great when he was on Irish television. But I will say about Lawrence, and I was looking at something there the other day, and my head popped up. There was no sound on, which is great. So I don't know what he was talking about. So it could have been still the same Lawrence and muck that he normally talks about. But he looks a lot healthier since they took all his jobs away from him. He looks happier in himself, and that's good, because he'd gone very grey and hated football. Like, literally hated football. When he used to be on commentator, it was just like he really just hated being there.
He still does Today FM. He still does the radio.
That's not real, though. That's not real, Andy. Yeah, because
Lawrence is on LFC TV now, isn't he?
Is he?
Pretty sure he is. Yeah, I think he's.
Well, think maybe that's why. Maybe that's why he's so happy, Gav, because he just looks genuinely happy again. He looks healthy and he looks happy again. And I was delighted to see that, because he was such a great player for us. So it was just good to see him. That's all I want to say on that. Just when you mentioned Lawrence in there, we just thought I'd give you that update on how he's looking these days, because I think it's important to look well when you're a pundit.
But do you not think, you know, before Carragher done his whole spitting incident, he was a lot better. Like, I mean, I recall the whole when we beat Everton in the last seconds of the game, and he was screaming, you know, the house down, and look at Jurgen Klopp when he was running onto the pitch. Like, that's going to irritate other fans, fair enough, because he's clearly supporting Liverpool while he's watching the game, but it's more honest. You know what I mean? This idea of being super anti-Liverpool just because you don't want everyone saying that you're biased is ridiculous.
I just
love watching Aldo shouting his head off for LFC TV and the radio stuff he does, and Meller when he's on, and even Gerrard when he's done a bit of TV. You know, that's a far sooner than just be honest. They're football fans.
What are we going to say, Gav?
They are football fans. I think Chris Nicholson nails it for me. He says just about every pundit comes across as idiotic, starving for relevance. And I think that's a massive issue. I'm not saying all of them are starving for relevance.
Are they, though?
I think they are, Andy. I think the world we live in today now, relevance is a massive thing. You know, when you think back, like, you're talking ex-Liverpool players, Hansen famously said you don't win anything with kids, and he's been slaughtered with it for about 25 years since, right? But Hansen was very, very good at what he'd done, because he broke down a game, he looked at it, he went over it, he'd show you defensive analysis and stuff like that. And he was made famous by something that he said because it was his opinion. Now when I look at some people, they're only saying things because they know what the reaction is going to be. You know the sort of way? And like, you know this, I don't watch a lot of pre and post match stuff on any channel when Liverpool are playing. I literally turn it on as it's kicking off, and when it's over, I knock it off. I go out and do something else at half time. I don't sit around and listen to them. But with regards to Liverpool pundits, some of them can be very biased, and that's just built into them. There's nothing you can do. Carragher's bias has disappeared for me over the last while, and sometimes that's good and sometimes it's not. I'm not a massive fan of McManaman. I always felt Ronnie Whelan hated Liverpool, right? And I have this thing in my head, right? And not hated Liverpool, but I tell you, he always seemed to, no matter what he was commentating on with regards to Liverpool, he would always seem to nearly be disgusted at Liverpool because they weren't as good as the Liverpool that he used to play for. He wasn't in the moment. He was like, these aren't as good as when I played. Well, no, you played one of the best teams you've ever seen. You know, sort of way. But overall, I think, I know it's a Liverpool-based pundit thing, but overall on pundits, my feel pundits is, it's saying stuff for the sake of saying stuff. You know, it's engaging with stuff because it's all about engagement now. You know, and I'll put it this way. You see more and more pundits, right, being clipped, as they call it, and put on the internet for outrageous stuff they say, rather than, oh, he's at the break in that move down really well, or he's at the break in that player down really well. You don't see that anymore, Andy. It's all about, said something ridiculous. And all we're talking about with Gary Neville right now is not what he's... You see, 2 years ago with Gary Neville, it was all about, you see him on Monday night and he broke down how this team done this and this team done that, and he was really good. Don't get me wrong, really good. But now all we talk about with Gary Neville is clips about, let's get a clip about what he thinks about Manchester United. Can United win the league? Because he hasn't stopped doing this social media stuff where he keeps going on about it. And that's where it's got to. I don't think that pundits anymore at all. That's being honest with you.
I think you're right there, Gav, about them kind of not being pundits. So a pundit should be breaking down things in the game that maybe we can't see. And that goes for co-commentary as well. Like, we've all been to games, and the difference looking at a game when you're in Anfield or whatever stadium you're in compared to watching on the telly is chalk and cheese. You see so much more going on because of the angle that you have and so much more in the game. The problem is, like what you said, is that they get clipped. I hate using the word clickbait. I hate using it, but it is all about traffic, social media traffic and all that online stuff. And that's what these big companies want. I think I like Souness. I think he's one of the better ones. I think when Neville and Carragher are breaking down a game and tactics and they're going through it, which is excellent, rather than the fucking Liverpool United niggle that was good at the start, but it wore off very quick. I like Souness, but I actually don't mind. It's probably, I don't know if it's popular or whatever like that. I think some of the women that have come into the game are actually quite good. I think you're one off BT. Karen Carney is actually very good. She's the one that got a bit of stick from the Leeds fans that time over saying something. There was a bit of a pile on, but particularly co-commentary, I've heard her a few times with BT, and I think she's very, very good. So, listen, I think all you want is somebody to break things down in the game that you can't see yourself, and I don't think there's enough of that anymore, really.
I fully agree.
I think, Andy, I think pundits are a sack of shit. I honestly do. They bring no insight to the game. They add nothing to it. They're not pundits because they're not providing an insight. All they're there is to sell a product, right? There used to be a time when they were there to explain what was going on, because you didn't have 24/7 coverage, you didn't have social media, you didn't have people who were producing their own insights and coaching and stuff like that, which allowed the normal supporter to be able to get more educated if he wants to go that deep on it, right? So the insight that these fellas offer is generally less than what you can get outside of the game. And the ones who have something intelligent or are versed in what's going on are generally employed by a football club, and they aren't acting as a pundit on the television because they're doing analysis for their own club and they don't want to share it with what's going on. I wouldn't like watch a game, watch it, don't bother. Like, what are you going to learn off a pundit? Why you even bother? It'll just frustrate you. And I think what happens is when we see X, I think the fans also have a misunderstanding that an X player should only be in unison with the fans' voice, forgetting the fact that it's a profession in terms of what they're doing on the television, and they're there to sell that channel. They're not there to sell insight or resource on the game. They're basically just there to sell that soundbite, to sell something mad that's going to draw people in online. Like, talk show is built around people saying ridiculously fucking stupid things so as that people retweet it and they get their banner all across Twitter. Like, they have a fella's head who's about to explode someday on Halloween. Your man, Alan Brazil. Did you ever see the size of his head? It's immense. It's like this big giant red thing that looks like it's a tomato, right? And they have Danny Murphy? They're the same person, aren't they? They just literally talk the most drony load of cabbage that you'll ever see in your life. And you're better off not watching it. Better off not listening to it, because eventually it turns your brain into chewing gum. And you think that they make sense. So when it comes to LFC pundits, like, I've absolutely no time for any of them. I can't think of one. Neil Mellor's probably the one, but he hasn't been on mainstream television, and we know him, and he's a really nice bloke, and we've talked to him on these podcasts. So I like Neil Mellor, so I'll give him a big thumbs up.
Neil Mellor is cool.
Ray Hudson, that's the American, the mad Geordie fella was on the American stuff.
Poker says he's the Sid with the L of football.
Yeah, right. But again, these are fellas that aren't mainstream. Well, they're mainstream. Ray Hudson's mainstream in America, right? But like, they're not normally seen blokes. They're blokes who are there and have been adding colour. I'm not saying they're pundits. They're the colour commentator. So you have the guy who's commentating the game. Ray Hudson is the one coming in with mad stuff that's going on. So like, you know, most of the pundits you see on the television are just part of the little English mentality that goes on. I got that one in for you, Gav. Why would you have somebody like a Jermaine Jenas on the television? Why would you have a Paul Ince on the television? What relevance to modern football do these guys have? I have the same issue with the likes of John Giles and stuff when they were on.
They're not long out of the game, though, Phil. Like, you know, Ince was only managing and Genus wasn't playing too long ago.
What was Ince managing? Sabutio?
I don't know, but still, like, better than what we were managing. But like, it's just bizarrely off the mark. And look, I completely understand. Like, talk sport is all about the clicks and the sound bites and the stupidity. A lot of Sky is, you know, especially Neville stuff, like talking about politics and kind of creeping into subjects which are contentious that are just going to get people going mad. But like, what's Danny Murphy's agenda? Like,
Danny Murphy is still upset that Rafa sold him.
Liverpool were good to him, and he was good to Liverpool. He got some important goals, particularly against United and whatever, and we enjoyed him. But I really don't understand why his issue is. He could easily come on and still have the same effect by being the biggest biased bollocks ever.
He's trying to go the other way. He's trying to go too far the other way.
It's stupid. It's ridiculous. Like, yeah, you know, thing about a throw-in. Like, Liverpool are the ones who are notoriously famous for having this throw-in coach. And he specifically brought that up. Like, what is he doing doubting Jurgen Klopp and his methods?
But it's not even that. He went on about an Aston Villa set-piece coach, and Aston Villa scored from a set-piece. And then Janus, in the same breath, is telling you that he's watched the Liverpool-Burnley game and didn't see anything in the game whatsoever that was over physical from Burnley, when Klopp had clearly pointed them out in three different separate specific incidents. You know, they're not watching the game. Like,
and then Leeds said the same thing about Burnley this week.
I'm telling you, like, Liverpool, Manchester United in particular, if you say something anyway controversial about those two, you're on a winner. That's simple as that. Because nobody triggers more around the world in sports media or in football media than Liverpool and Manchester United. If you say something controversial about either of them, their manager, their squad, whatever it might be, you're guaranteed you're going to get, like you said, you're going to get clicks, you're going to get people reading your articles, you're going to get people reacting, and that's what they want. You know what I mean? Somebody says there, Roy Keane is brilliant. Roy Keane is brilliant for me, because he's brutally fucking honest. Now, there is times where I think it's starting to slip, where they're trying to make a bit of a fucking mockery at times, you know, this time and meet Michael Richards thing. But then I watch the interview with him and Neville, and Neville is saying, people don't know you off screen. how good a laugh you are. You love going out for a drink, and you know, during your playing days, you were like a manager in the dressing room, but at the same time, you were lying to Alex Ferguson about having 20 bottles of beer down the pub. You said you only had 10. You know, the sort of thing, and you covered for lads. So, and I do kind of worry when I see what Sky tried to do with him and Micah Richards. And all right, it's lighthearted, and I get that, but they're trying to paint him in a different way. But if you look at Roy Keane as a Manchester United man through and through, he lashes Manchester United when he needs to. He lashes them. And he praises Liverpool when he needs to. Because he's, like in particular, I remember him, I think Liverpool beat United at Anfield. And he literally just turned around and went, they're brilliant. They're absolutely fucking brilliant at football. Mm. And that United side are miles off them and went through them. And I like that. I do like that about Roy Keane.
Yeah.
But I do worry about times when it just starts to... They're turning the dial on him a little bit, and then you kind of go, okay, I need to knock
okay. I honestly like him. I look, and he does lash United, you're dead right. But at times over the last few years, especially since Keane has got involved in television, it's been a bit of a low-hanging fruit to bash United. Like, there's, for the team that he watched playing, there's so many imposters out there. You know, not now, they're getting a lot better, but like, it must have drove him absolutely crazy to see passengers out there who weren't playing for the short. And, you know, you liken him to, you know, our Gerrard or Souness. Like, you know, I mean, they'd be equally as aggravated when they were watching Paulson and other imposters like Kaczewski playing. And I'd completely forgive them for lashing in there. But it's just weird at the moment, like, that all these pundits who watched us win the league just a year ago in the Champions League 2 years ago, are so quick to criticise and put it in and sort of put doubt that and say that this team is finished. You know, it's just bizarre.
For me, I think they should get rid of all the pundits. I think they should stop calling them pundits. They're not analysts, they're not pundits. And they should just focus on colour, right? The reason why Dunphy, Brady and Giles were perfection on Irish TV for so long was because nobody paid any attention to their analysis of the game because it was rubbish, right? We were just there to see the rows that they had amongst themselves, right? Like, let's be honest about it. And we wanted to see what outrageous thing. It was colour. It was colour. It was adding colour to the broadcast. It was bringing something. You wanted to see a row in a pub like your mates at halftime, and that's what we were getting. Right, and that's literally what it was. And I think they need to get away from this idea of giving us analysis because they're not going to be able to. They can't. The fellas that they're asked to do analysis couldn't analyze their way home, right, without Google Maps. This is where we need to get away and get the most entertaining personalities in.
Yeah, but you're on a tightrope then because you're going down the route of the people you're looking at now, and you're kind of going, he's only here to be fucking say something to be laughed at, or you know, the sort of way where I know where you're coming from. Anyone that's never seen Giles Dunphy and Brady on Irish television, go on YouTube, some of the stuff, it was genuine what they were doing. They were just three old men getting really fucking agitated with each other all the time, but it wasn't done. It was done in an era where only the people watching on the telly would see it. It wouldn't be across social media. It wouldn't be across anything. But now you're kind of getting that, but it's kind of nearly like it's scripted. And that's where I think people have the issue with them as well.
And none of them can say a negative thing about anything they're trying to sell. And that drives me mad. Nobody talks about what's going on. Look, at the end of the day, Andy says about the LFC pundits, in reality, they're no better and no worse than the rest that's out there. I just think it's horrible, and I wouldn't allow my brain to melt it. So I'd be like, nah, bin punditry. It's got no place in modern day football. Get fans in to punch the head off each other instead. That would be much. Everyone seemed to enjoy that when
you
know.
I can't believe they got rid of that. Do you remember they used to have the fan cam and the fan zone? Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, that was good.
Amazing, because it was just two normal lads sitting there. I don't know if they'd ever have a drink, and it was like a goal goes in, they'd be jumping up and they'd be bleeding. Slapping fellas in the head and all, you know, like because you got a goal and stuff. It was a brilliant idea. I don't know why they got rid of it.
I tell you what, Phil, you should get Tony Romo over and just do get him to do the commentary with Tyler. Yeah, now that'll be some good stuff.
Not Tyler, please. If I turn something on and he's on it, I'll find another channel that's showing it. That doesn't have one. Yeah,
I can't.
Nah, he's the worst.
He needs to be taken out and sent off to the Afghanistan Premier League instead.
Peter Drury and Tony Romo, dream team.
Yeah, Peter Drury and Beglin, I think McCoy's brilliant. I think McCoy's brilliant as well.
McCoy's is good, but again, Gav, it goes back to he's not trying to know the XG, and he's not trying to provide that. What he is providing colour, and he's trying to provide his excitement and the love of the game that he has, and express that on the pitch for people who are watching it. And that's what you want. That's what you want. You know what I mean?
Shane Down said there that the fan cam stuff was removed because of foul language, and Mikey D said. We're far too PC nowadays for the fans on, which is a fair point. You know, you'd have to put them on a massive delay and then it wouldn't work, wouldn't it? So it's one of those.
Well, it would for those who are watching illegal streams, because they'd just go around and say, listen,
go over and watch fan camp, but just to let you know, the lads are gargling and they could be punching the head off each other, and they could say very bold words. You've been warned, so don't go complain.
We're 90 minutes in. This has been the forum. I've been your host, Phil Casey. Unfortunately, it's an international week. I was going to use the old favourite of our international football topic, but to be honest with you, I'd rather cut my testicles off than watch international football, to be quite frank, right?
We'll do something different next week.
Yeah, I have my topic picked out for next week. What was it?
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's why Danny Murphy is the best pundit on television. That's my topic for next week, right? No, I don't know what it is. However, to my left and to your right is Shane Davern. Below me, of course, is Peter Smith, a.k.a. Gavin Doyle, or Peter Smith. And then beside Gav, of course, is Andy Young. This has been three of the four topics, because Pete didn't turn up. Pete's topic was Harvey Elliott, so...
Give an excuse in WhatsApp? I haven't even checked.
Just he's said dead. He's having serious issues. Well, I don't know if that's pod related or if he has serious issues. Could be happening.
He's just not allowed on the podcast.
I don't know. Something he tried to come on, it wasn't working, and then it didn't happen. So,
yeah,
that's
fair enough. Of course, there's the Siena appeal is still going on. Lash on, put a load of money into it, do what you can. There's no match on this week, so whatever you're going to gamble on the football match, stick into the Siena appeal instead. Now, there's a way to do it, right? You'll probably win back as much as you would have won if you were betting at the weekend.
If only Joe did that, he'd pay for the whole sort thing himself.
At the weekend himself, right? Gav, can I do, what's this week's lineup? So tomorrow...
Tomorrow we are doing a transfer deadline day, but it's going to be...
That's what I said. Tomorrow's a transfer deadline day special. Wednesday...
9 o'clock. 9 o'clock tomorrow instead of 10, just to let people know. We're going to go probably 9 till 11. And as I said, it's going to be about all the clubs. So bring a drink and we just have a bit of crack for 2 hours. Don't take it too seriously.
Who's on it?
I don't know yet. I know two people that are on it, me and one other person, but I haven't decided anything yet on that.
Wednesday, I might drop in towards the back end of that as well, because I'm doing a bit of coaching tomorrow night, and then I'll be back in after the coaching.
You could be banned off YouTube after your comments about Fabinho this evening. But
what did I say?
You were ridiculous. Wednesday is
Jamie's show. Jamie's attic.
Thursday is Carnage with Grizz.
Thursday's Canterbury's. Friday is
Sports Unplugged with Abby.
Sports and
things. Unplugged with Abby. And then we have a weekend off until we come back on Sunday. We've Saturday off and we're back on Sunday.
So the Red Sea lads aren't doing anything this weekend?
No, because there's no match.
All right.
You're dying for them to do stuff. Okay, we can make up a match if you wanted. Next week, because it's international break, people have requested. Because literally it's this weekend and we have 5 days and then we're back, aren't we?
Yeah.
Right. So it's two weekends, just one, right. So people have requested quizzes, people have requested drafts, people have requested me and Andy to have a big random chat while we drink, which I'll have to see. I'll have to check. I'll have to ring Andy's job and see where he is on the roster. And and loads of other stuff in between. We always have fun on international break, basically.
There was one that we said in the summertime we should do that in the international break. And I can't remember what it was.
Coming back to me, and I don't know what it is. You're right.
We'll do that in the first international break.
Picking teams.
Yeah, was it a draft to do with something?
Picking your worst team or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah. I'll think about that. I might have a note somewhere, actually.
Picking your worst 10 be a good one, all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I no, there was definitely one, and I think I have a note over here somewhere. I'll remember it. Right. I think it might have been something we're going to do on the forum one night. We said, no, we leave that till international break. It might have been something.
There was one. I can't remember. So if anyone in the chat there remembers what we were going to do, let us know, right?
Yeah. Okay, right. Yeah.
That's great. Okay, that's been the forum. I've been your host. That's been the show. Good night. God bless. Sports Social Podcast Network.